It's always like to thank everybody for coming this week, braving the cold of South Florida. Today's topic, I would say, is a pretty heavy topic. And really, it was decided to do this topic in conjunction with this event. Just this organization is, I think it's been around for the past like 5 years or so. National Association of Chevra Kedishas. And really, the topics we're going to discuss in today's share is probably an impetus to start this organization. Modern medicine and social ideas evolving, there is a need to unify and strengthen Chevra Kedishas and, in general, the halachic aspects of people who are sick, people who are in a dying state, medical care in America. And this organization does wonderful, wonderful things. I know the founder by his own, and quite a few of my friends were involved in the organization. It's a wonderful organization. In fact, I just found out here in South Florida, they have a very big initiative that, unfortunately, as some people come to this share are involved with. Many times there are people that pass away and there are issues. They want to cremate. They may not be able to have, they may not want a Jewish halachic funeral. And there's fundraising going on to always try to help a family like that, a situation like that, to bury properly. And this organization is actually undertaking a big initiative to build a cemetery where they will have control of the Chevra Kedishas cemetery. And this way, it will greatly reduce the price of Jewish burial here in South Florida. Wow. And it will help for all these type of situations where you try and convince the family to do the cheaper option of cremation. They should move over to do the halachic responsibility of Jewish burial. Somewhere here in South Florida. They're currently cultivating it already. They bought it, and it's quite a project. Also, I would announce that following the share on the Yeshiva's other campus is at 10:30, they're having an event which they'll be having people there explain and help people sign executive advance directives, which is an important step, perhaps we'll even touch upon in the share. And it's a free event, just having people help people fill out these forms, and Lolo, if it's ever needed, we'll have it. So today's share is entitled Euthanasia, a View from the Halachic Prism. And really, like many things, society affects us. The world today has been moving slowly but surely towards accepting the principle, the ideas of assisted suicides, assisted killing, euthanasia. It's becoming more and more popular in general in the world, but even here in America. There was a Supreme Court case named Curzon, about 1989, which that itself already looked like it was giving a right for a person to pull the plug. I remember when I was a kid, I was hearing about this Dr. Kevorkian, who was viewed as like, you know, a crazy idea of assisted, medically assisted suicides. But as the decades turn, society changes, people are more free, more accepting of such a notion. People are suffering. Why can't they do it this way? And this is definitely a pattern in American society, moving more towards, especially if you would have, you know, the government gets more involved in medicine and hospitals and medical care and rising costs. There's a lot of factors involved which it might be easy for many people to accept such a principle of euthanasia. that look, it's better for the person. He's suffering. They're suffering. Let's end it right here. And therefore, it's all the more importance as Torah Jews to understand the Torah perspective for ourselves, but also for others. You know, many times, especially in these scenarios with family members, with friends, whatever advice we could obviously sensitively and gently give for a situation could help. And the more that we understand it, the more we could give over to others what the Torah perspective is on these ideas. So today's shiur, you know, these topics are, as I said, very heavy. And really they require a big posik, a big rav to handle them. But I'd like, at least in terms of the responsibility of giving this shiur, to put forth the principles so that everyone here will be an informed individual. Lo'aleinu, if a situation presents itself, will know what to ask, will know the issues involved. Now, I have here, I believe, three very strong sources depicting the Torah's view of life. The first one, we'll begin with the Shulchan Aruch, Yerodea Simen Shin Lamites, Dine HaGoses. Goses is not an easy word to translate, a term to define. Basically, it means somebody on their deathbed. Somebody who is deathly ill. The Gemara, in fact, says, Rove Goses in Lamisa. Most people, when they're in the state of being a Goses, they're on their deathbed. It's a Rove, and Moshe Feinstein writes in one place, it's stronger than the average Rove. It's a Ruba de Ruba. When you reach that state, I saw another place, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, one of the doctors asked him, how do you define a goses? And he says, I turn to you for that one. Someone in the medical field, they know, they have a feeling, they've seen it. It may not be exactly easy to define in numbers, but this person looks like that's it. Obviously, we know there are situations that could be wrong. But for the most part, there's a definition of a goses. We'll simply say a person on his deathbed. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, HaGoses HaReihu Kichai L'chol Dvarav. A Goses, the Shulchan Aruch writes, is alive. He's classified in Halacha as living for everything. I'll read the Shach to you. I'll leave out the first line for a moment. The Kosovo Ran. HaReihu Kichai Perish Litin Get. He could still give a get. His wife will be considered a divorcee. Umatana, he could give a present. In this state, he could give a present to somebody. This will affect, obviously, the Yerusha. The Ron writes, a Kohen would be allowed even to go into such a house. However, later he brings, and the Shulchan Aruch says that in such a state, we do not allow a Kohen to walk in. So practically, for the Kohanim here, one would not walk in. We're choshesh, we're nervous, because it could happen at any moment. But in terms of the status of this person, he could give a get, he could give a matana, he's considered halachically alive. With that, the Shach writes in the first words, very important principle, v'asur lasos davar hamakarav misaso. It is forbidden for one to do something to be makarev, to hasten the person's death. The person right now is alive. He's on his deathbed. He's pronounced, call the family, any moment. But until the moment of death happens, in halacha, one is considered fully alive. And if one would actively do something to hasten one's death, one would be killing him. The Minchas Chinuch says this principle, really explaining this Shulchan Aruch, says even more clear. Look at the language of the Minchas Chinuch on top of your sheets. Echad aroig bari ochole afil goset bidei shemayim. If a person kills a healthy person, or even someone sick, even someone on their deathbed, nerag alav. Halacha is hirchayv misa. You killed somebody. Hechenu b'shas Sanhedrin, v'Rambam kan, after Rov Goses in Lamisa, even though we know most people in the state of a Goses is going to die, but kol makom, kivan sha'at achai, since right now the person's alive, for nasabo maisa, nothing was done to him, hareyu kachai, he's considered alive. Kemosha horeg bari, will be the same as if you kill a healthy person. Afim yovo elyo, even if you had a scenario where elyo and Navi himself will come, the yomer shalayu lo chayim, elol shal rega, he's the best doctor, elyo and Navi. Dr. Elyo could tell you exactly when he says he's going to die, he's going to die. Right? The medical field is very good, but they're not infallible. But Dr. Elyo and Navi will come in and tell you this person has X amount of time to live. Live. I know the future. Nevertheless, makol makom hatorah lo chilku bein horeg yeled sheyesh lo chayos kamashanim. The Torah makes no difference if you kill a child which has so much of a future, so many years in front of him, ubein horeg zakin ben neir, or if you kill a person who's 100 years old. B'chol inyan shel horeg chay chayiv. Any time you kill someone who's alive, you're chayiv misa. Hachanami aftu omer b'misa, even though he's destined to die, makol makom makmas arega sheyesh lo od sheyichya al zeh chayiv. Because right now, there's a few moments left of life. Killing any moment of life is considered in Judaism as killing. The goski chay l'chol davar, gosi is considered like a chay in all matters, and he quotes this Shulchan Aruch we had over here. Powerful. The Torah's definition of life is up until the last breath, the last heartbeat, the last moment. We'll get to maybe certain circumstances. But as long as a person is alive, there's a din that if one does anything to hasten his death, you're a murderer. And obviously that's a scary responsibility that anyone in the medical field is involved with. You know, that the Torah's definition is if the person is living, then you can't kill him. Even if we know for sure he's going to die in a few moments. Elianovi could walk in air and tell us he's going to die. It doesn't matter. Lamaisa, he's alive. He's still breathing. There's still a form of life there. And if you take away a moment of life, you're a killer. Very, very strong perspective. But it's a Shulchan Aruch. It's a Shach. Menachos Chinuch spells this out. Furthermore, it's a very interesting Bir Halacha. I'll first start with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is talking about the halachos of saving a person on Shabbos. Be Mechal Shabbos to save a person. So first he has a famous case in Halacha Gimel. Misha Nafalov Mapoles. Suffolk Chai Suffolk Mace. Rachman Son, there was a building collapse. And there were people trapped in the building. And you're not sure if the people are alive or not. Safik Usham, Safik Enosham. You have a Safik, were there people in there or not? Mavkichan love, Afbishesh Bakamas Fekos. Halacha is Bekuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. And even Safik Bekuach Nefesh. You're not sure if the person's in there. You're not sure if they're dead or alive. If Chas Hashem, a building collapses on Shabbos, and Chas Hashem, you have a fire on Shabbos, one be allowed to be Machal Shabbos, do everything they can for Safik Pekuach Nefesh. In Halacha Dala, the Mechaber goes further. Afilu Motsu Merutzos, She'enu Yachol Lechios, Afilu Shfisha. You have someone lying there in the fire, lying there in the building collapse, and you know this person only has moments to live. He's not going to live long. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Mafkichen. We're Mechal Shabbos. We go in there and we try to save even hours, moments of a person's life, even on Shabbos. And the Chavetz Chaim in the Bir Halacha has an extensive treatment of this halacha. It's very interesting to see the words of the Posek Posek Achron, the Chafetz Chaim. He's troubled with, when we talk about being Mechal Shabbos, in the Gemara, there's a term, he brings it over here in the beginning of that Ber Halacha. The Avagav de Loshay Chacha Tam, Chol Shabbos Achas, Kadesh Yishma Shabbosos Harbe. We have a motivation, we have a reason, why in Mechal Shabbos? To save a person's life. Because you know what? It's better for you to be Mechal this Shabbos, so that your friend will be able to keep many Shabbosim. The Gemara uses that phraseology, that reason. So seemingly, in such, that would only allow us, Mechal Shabbos, to save a person's life. Where, post this point, the person could live for multiple Shabbosim. So Halacha Gimel, it makes sense. Even Savik Pekuach Nefesh, on Shabbos with Dochet, to save a person's life. But what about in the Halacha Dalet? Where the Mechaber is talking about a scenario, a case, where the person you're saving only has X amount of time to live. He has a very serious injury, and he's not going to pull through. You could save him for now. So there, he's not going to keep future Shabbosim. So why are you allowed to desecrate one of our holiest mitzvahs of Shabbos to save moments, hours, of a person's life? So the Chafetz Chaim writes, he really quotes in the Meiri, he quotes this whole idea, the Meiri quotes this idea of you could keep multiple Shabbos of, he says, Lav Dafka Shabbos, to within other mitzvos, and even in a scenario where you know it's Yefter for him to live, Afil Sha'achas. Still, maybe Yalsha Belibo V'Yizvada. The Meiri says, well, there's another element. Even if he's not able to keep future Shabbosim, but maybe to keep him alive another moment, especially a person on the pangs of death, maybe he'll do tshuva for things that he did wrong in his life. And for that special moment, it's kedai to save a person. Because for a person to have that moment, Yesh kono lomo b'sha'achas. There are some people that could change their lives on their deathbed. And how can we deny a person that opportunity of life? He did things wrong in life. He feels bad on his deathbed. He has regret. He has charata. That's tshuva. So that alone, even where you know a person's not going to live, that's a reason to do it. Chafetz Chaim says, no, it's even further than that. Amnon be'emes nira techozel l'taima ba'alma. All this maybe is a little bit like the Sefer HaChinuch to give us a palpable reason that we could be motivated to save a person's life. However, I have a l'dina v'altoli klal ha'mitzvah b'shvil chayim shel Yisrael. It's not that we're pushing off this mitzvah of Shabbos so this other person could do many mitzvahs of Shabbos in the future. He could do the mitzvah of Vidoy in the future. No. The Chafetz Chaim says, even if the Gemara, even if the Rishonim use reasoning of doing future Shabbos and future mitzvos of Vidoy, changing a person's life, the Chafetz Chaim says it's not limited to that. The entire Torah is pushed aside to save the life of a person, even if it's just a few moments. And this is a major move the Chafetz Chaim makes. Right? The simple reading of the Gemara, one would say one could only save a life if that person's going to live. You could desecrate Shabbos only if the person's going to live. You could desecrate Shabbos only if the person has a chance to do tshuva in those moments. But the Chafetz Chaim is saying no. In all scenarios, one is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, and that explains Halacha Dalet. Yes?
Even the Meiri has to do with it. I'm not allowed to drive my car on Shabbos because I know somebody's going to smoke a cigarette on Shabbos and I can convince them not to. Not only Mechal Shabbos because somebody needs to do Vido. Obviously, even the Meiri just means it, as a way of dogma ba'alma. It doesn't mean that that's the case.
Right, I would agree with you, even really because of Siftalot over here. There's Halza Meiri, read the Mechaber. The Mechaber came after him. But where did the Mechaber get it from? Is arguing the Meiri? Right, the Chafetz Chaim is really saying that's what everybody means. They're giving you a palpable reason to motivate you in your Hatzol guy running out of Shul and Shabbos, and sometimes it's the first time that you're doing it. Maybe you feel a little bit sacrilegious, like I'm running out of Shul. Just motivate him. But really, it's in all scenarios.
That's the
yes.
Basic.
Exactly. Right. The entire Torah is pushed aside. You're right. For Losamo Adam Reacha, if you could do something to save a person's life, life takes precedence. Yes?
You mentioned Hatzolah guy. You know, an experienced Hatzolah guy could show up and know that the odds are very much the person's not going to make it. So if it's not for this out, so to speak, how would he be able to put him on the ambulance and take him to the hospital?
Right, right. You need this bir halacha is major. It really is major. And it's interesting because we're seeing two sides of the coin. On the one hand, look, we value life so much that if you kill a person, even in a state of his deathbed, he's a gosis, echai misa. From the idach gisa, we're consistent. We'll push off any mitzvah in the Torah, including Shabbos, to go and save a person's life to any degree. And the Chafetz Chaim spells out a few beautiful applications of this. I'm skipping to the period, about 8 lines from where we just left off. Could I read 2 more additional segments of this Ber Halacha to get clarity in the idea? Well, Fizeh Barer, middle of the line right by the period. Ta'afil katan merutzus nami mechalun. Even a katan who is deathly ill, yimachal Shabbos, afapi delishma Shabbosos. Even though he's never going to keep Shabbos, even live another week, but it's only a matter of time. He's a young kid. Gamal Izvada, he's not going to be Mizvada. He's a little kid, can't speak, can't think in these terms. He's not going to do Vidoy, Vilova Kal Godo, Afa Piki Machalo. It's irrelevant to whether the person's going to do Tshuva. It could be a little kid. There's no, can't fathom these ideas. Nevertheless, Machalo. Hu Adin Cheresh Vishota. If Rachman is on the child, there is a cherish or a shota. He's a child not blessed with intelligence, no means of understanding. That life is precious to us too. And that life, you also have to be mechal Shabbos. Even if he's not b'nei mitzvos, makomak mechal love, to a mikvi mitzvah, a makami mitzvah, hu mishimon tzur. The only reason a child without full intelligence doesn't do mitzvahs, it's not his fault. He's an onis. He was never blessed with full intelligence. V'lo nothing miklal zeh elam Yisrael mumer l'hachetz. The only person who we wouldn't be mechal Shabbos for is a Jew who blatantly goes against the Torah, the mezid, which nowadays we say there aren't too many people fall into that category. Avol cheres yeshota Torah patru machmas onso. You will not find a living Jewish person, for the most part, who will not be included in this directive that we must save lives. Doesn't matter if it's a young child, a young baby. Doesn't matter if it's a child, a cheresh, shota. Does not matter. All Jewish life is precious, and all Jewish life deserves the utmost effort, even on Shabbos, to save that life. One more step that's kedai to read in this Ber Halacha. It's a second wide line, also by the period over there. Vida'od. To who adin goses, nami mechalimov. Even a goses, someone on the deathbed, was still mechal Shabbos on the Fkeach Hagal, olim, rofi omer shesimonim elu, yi'ilu. If a doctor says, by doing things for him, medical treatments, it will help Maharach Rigi Chayav, to extend the moments of his life, will still do it. The Marutsunami Gosesu, the Garami Goses. He says this case of Marutsus is even worse than a regular Goses. The Lakabazal feel Miyuta Miyuta. There's not even a tiny semblance of hope he's going to live. Aval Pikein Mishum Chayisha, Mechal Love. Just to live another moment, a Chayisha, still a Mechal Shabbos. Smoking Goses, and he quotes Smag, V'zel l'shono matzul chai, af al pishin et srozitz mocho, even though his brain was smashed. V'enu yachol lichos ki ma'at, mafkichin lov, umotzim ol chai yisho. Very interesting line that the Chafetz Chaim here is quoting. And in fact, I found Rabbi Yashav quotes this line of the Be'er Halacha as a precedent that even someone who's brain dead, we would still consider alive for the idea of B'Machal Shamas. Rabbi Yashav reads it from this line in the Be'er Halacha that we have a case, pretty graphic, where the person, the child, person's brain is crushed, it's brain dead. But nevertheless, we would be Machal Shabbos still considered alive. For the record, Shlomo Zalman Orbach argues and says it's not crystal clear we're talking about a case where the person is brain dead. The case could just be a brain injury, but not that he is on the medical level of being called brain dead, and therefore he said from this particular Be'er Halacha, these were the Chafetz Chaim, may not have a proof. Very interesting. But either way, what emerges from these words of the Chafetz Chaim is an absolute responsibility in all scenarios, all circumstances. A person who's alive, you would go to the utmost extreme to Machal Shabbos to save them, even to live just a chayisha, a few moments. It doesn't matter how old the person is, if they'll do tshuva, if fully functioning. Any member of Jewish society has the right, has the schus, that we should save their lives, even just for a few moments. And I believe, and I saw multiple articles, people beautifully define, what emerges from these, from Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea, Menachos Chinuch, and these words of the Chafetz Chaim, is the Torah's view on life is a fascinating view. Life is not defined based on quality of life, based on accomplishment, based on all the modern day quantifiers of what life is. We view life in any scenario, any situation. That's a very special thing. That's a sanctity to it, and one cannot take that away. And all the more so, a person has to do everything they can to save that life. And leave the nice philosophical idea, so a few people write, is that the Torah, the Jewish understanding of life, is as long as a person has a body functioning in this world, your neshama, your soul is there. A neshama is infinite. It's a heavenly device, which is really on loan to this world, Chosman, a person has a body. The moment the body, okay, is no longer here, then the neshama will eventually go back to Shemayim. But Chosman, the person is alive, even in the most, you know, most horrible, most seemingly most pain-stricken state, there's that eternal, infinite source of spirituality, a neshama, and that deserves respect. And that's why we machal Shabbos, and that's why if you kill a person, you're doing a heinous crime.
Even Rabbi Tamir Ben Taraja, at the hands of the Romans, his students begged him, at least open your mouth and let the flames take you. He said, God gave you the neshama.
Beautiful example, you're right. Beautiful. So that, I believe, is a clear portrayal of the Torah's view of life. But there's a second point. So far we understand what the Torah's view of life is. There's a second point which I think is important, especially to combat a societal idea. It's my body, it's my decision. People say, okay, the religion, ideas, you know what? It's my body. And I should be the ultimate person to decide what's going to be with me. So to that I found the fascinating tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe was asked, I did a little bit of research on it, it's dated Rosh Chodesh Kislev, Tavshin Lamed Tes. So basically that 1978-1979, and this tshuva was written to Rav Moshe Scherer, the president, the head of the Agudas Yisrael of America. And look what he writes. B'dvar shenishal mi Washington, took me a while to read that word, mi lishkas ha-nasi, office shall ha president. Who's the president in 1978-1979? Jimmy Carter. It seems Jimmy Carter's office sent the shayla to through Rav Moshe Scherer to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Right there. And he was asked to shayla bidvar shimosh beivarm shal meis al pi tzavasa l'tzarech refuah. Can you donate human organs after a person dies for the benefit of helping, saving people? And Rav Moshe writes, hinei meisha b'ksara. I'm going to answer you very short. Short and clear to the point. People know Tshuvas from Rav Moshe. They could go on for pages and pages. But he knew he was addressing Mr. Carter, the president. I'm going to give you a clear Torah answer. Hinei meisha b'ksara ki al pi din Torah. Based on the din of Torah, look how strong he writes. Shep kiblu mi Sinai. That we accepted all the way back to Sinai. Ancient Adam Bailim Al Gufo. Excuse me, I should read stronger. Shekvil Chazal Ish mi pi Ish on Moshe Rabbeinu. We got this man to man. We could trace the chain back. The Rambam has it. We have it. You could trace the chain back all the way back to Kabbalah Satorah and Har Sinai. Ancient Adam Bailim Al Gufo. No person has power, has bailus over his body, let Savashias Begufo to tell us what to do with his body. Feel rock the aver echame varav. Even just one aver in his body. He could not command Shem Dover, Avlatsor Tzerchel, Asagas Idios Linir Fura. Kolshekin Banov Krova Main Bayamazat. Not only is, of course, the person has no power, but certainly his family members have no right in this. And he says, furthermore, v'gam beloza also ba'ana b'gufa shal adam. There's an idea that a person's body, after he passes on, is aser ba'ana. Nobody else could, you can't sell it. You can't get benefit from it. Feel me, aver echad, el mechayvim lekovro tekev kishaef shabal ba'yom. The halachic view is we have to bury a body when possible that day. Below shem shina b'gufa, without changing the body. V'also natachas gufa, and also to put in normal circumstances to perform a surgery on a body. Vavod achitach, you have to bury him b'shlemos. Basically, Yedida Moshe Feinstein. Very clear, strong tshuva, where Moshe says, you can't, and you're not going into this topic unto itself, of donating organs. But Rav Moshe is clearly writing that one is not allowed to donate organs. He wrote this to President Carter. And Rav Moshe says, you know why you can't do that? Because we don't own our bodies. Our bodies are also here on loan. It's not ours. This is really an idea behind many things, suicide and things. We don't control our bodies. There are certain things we can't do to our bodies. The Torah puts prohibitions on many things. We don't work, we just work here. We're not owners, we're renting this, and as a renter, you can't make major changes. So, when a person's alive, one, you mean to donate a kidney? Excellent question. Right? If we don't own it, so what gives me the right to do that? Very good point. But we're not doing halachic organ donors and the like. But yes, there is a difference in such a scenario.
But more simplistic, can you give blood?
Yeah.
That's not dangerous.
It's not dangerous. But he's really arguing, but that's part of you. You know, do you really own that? Do you really have bilus over that? Excellent question. A different topic, different share. But what emerges from here is the argument that it's my body, it's my decision, is not true. We have our bodies on loan. We're renting it. But we didn't pay off the mortgage. We don't have full bias over it. And therefore, we would not be able to give over our organs. Achramisa, not be allowed. Now, that's all what I put on one side of the page. I specifically made a second side of the page. And once we fully digest two arguments that, on the one hand, life is so precious and life is eternal, and the Torah's view on life is until the last breath, one cannot kill somebody, one has to do everything to be Mechal Shabbos to save that life. At the same time, we don't own our bodies. We don't have full rights to do whatever we want with them. But there is another side of the equation. There's a Ran in the Nedarim. This Ran, this Rishon, giving a parish in the Gemara. The Gemara uses the term Emevakishel of Rachamim Lo Sheyichvi El Sheyamos. The Gemara is talking where a person made a neder not to give Hana to another person. So the Gemara said, well, if you're going to say you're not going to give him any benefit, you're not allowed to daven for him. Not that he should live, nor that he should die. What does Gemara mean, not to daven that a person should die? Nir be'enai, the halchikamer. The Ran says, it appears to me, this is how you learn Pshat in the Gemara. Pa'amim shetzarech levakish racham al-chol sheyamos. There are times one should pray for a sick person to die. For example, the person is suffering tremendously. The Efshalo Sheyichya, and there's no way he's going to pull through. Kedamrinim Perakonosia, the Gemara says in Ksubas, famous story. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rebbe was very sick. Kivan de Chazi as Amasi de Rebbe, when the maidservant of Rebbe saw how much he was suffering. The old Kamazim in the Beis Akisei was constantly going to the bathroom. Vanach tefillin, and he put on tefillin to become tzar. And he was in such pain, he couldn't put on tefillin. He was just suffering so much. Amra yi ratzin shikafu al yonim ez atachtonim. She said, the next world should beat out this world. And basically, it should take Rebbe. Klomar, dilamas Rebbe. So, she was in the spot of such a thing, and the Gemara says, and then, following that, he died. Shemach kamer nevaka cholo ma'ul b'tefilah so afil lichios. Okay. So, the Ran here seems like he's writing a principle that there is an idea of one davening, actively davening, for a person to die. A person is suffering so much, a person is misfollowed. You know what? I think it's in this person's best interest. He's suffering, there's so much pain he's going through, he can't take it. He's not going to live anyway. There's a concept that Ran says that one could be misfollowed that a person dies. However, yes?
That's different than being actively involved in it.
Correct. Correct, correct. Very good point. Yes, I'll deal with that in a moment.
Can the individual ask that the student stop praying that he should continue to live?
Excellent. Right. It would seemingly be, if the Ran is giving an idea that one could daven actively to die, then certainly to passively tell people, refrain from davening, seemingly that would work also. Yeah. Now, for the record, and people point this out, this Ran is not brought in the Shulchan Aruch. And in the basic Masara of the Shulchan Aruch and the Mefarshim Shulchan Aruch, this Ran is not brought. So, not so simple, this is fully accepted. However, it is found in Shin Lamed Hei, I found in Yerodea Shin Lamed Hei in the Aruch HaShulchan, does bring this Ran down. As well as Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes this in Tshuva. And he uses this as a precedent for an idea, which maybe it's best if I first spell it out outside, then we'll read a little bit of it inside. You're right, there's a big difference between davening that a person should die because they're suffering versus actively doing something to hasten a person's death. It's a big difference. One, even if you're davening, it's not you doing it, you're davening to Hashem, that should be brought about. You're right. But Ramosha takes this idea as giving us a principle. On the one hand, we have the concept of life is infinite. My body, my decision is not true. We'd not bind them over our bodies. But on the second hand, there is an element of caring for and being sensitive to the pain and suffering of a person who's deathly ill. Obviously, there's something to that. But it's tricky exactly to define, okay, so where does that fall in? So tricky that I saw one halakhic article where somebody really calls it as a balance. There are two Torah principles. There's a Torah principle on the one hand of, I'm going to dispute this in a moment, so don't let this sink in. There's a Torah principle of life and the beauty of life, the sanctity of life on one hand, but there's also suffering, and the Torah strikes to look for a balance between the two. After doing my research, I did not like the way that article was written. That's not true. Rav Moshe says, the post can say, what we discussed till now in the first part of the share, that's a brick wall. It's an absolute that there's a sanctity of life, and one could not actively do anything to hasten a person's death. It's not an issue of a balance. That is a clear-cut red line that one cannot cross. As long as the person is alive, if you would actively do something to hasten that person's death, then you're a killer. And you could have all the Rachmanis, and you could have all the sensitivity to the pain of the person. It's not a balance. It doesn't take effect. Where there is room, where Ramosha and later other poskim talk about, is a passive euthanasia. Cases where there's a passive things where you're not taking an action. In halacha, you refer to it as a sheva al-tasa. You're sitting back and you're not doing something. In some scenarios, because of pain, that would be permitted. But anything which would be defined as an active measure that a person's taking to hasten the person's life, that's not a balance. That's killing. Yes. Huh? Oh, yes. So we'll get to these things.
You even have a situation where administration of pain medication could actually have a side effect of hastening death.
Excellent. I'm going to talk about that case too.
Being morphined in Torah.
Yes. I have these cases, and I'd like to talk a few practical cases. But let me just read this tshuva inside, where Moshe, in Choshen Mishpat. You would think these are more Yoredei Shilas, but Choshen Mishpat also deals with if you kill people. There's a responsibility for that. So Moshe has a series of tshuvas. This is really like the last volume of the Igros Moshe, Chelek Zayin, that Moshe wrote by himself. There's a series of tshuvas where he quotes the Ran, is tshuva Ayin Gimel. In Ayin Hey, he talks about extending a person's life of pain, where there's no hope. A person has a terminal illness. He's addressing this tshuva to his son-in-law, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Tendler. And he writes, reading from the second and third line, "Bchola sartin, person who has cancer, shabaderech atavi yefshesi yisrape lichus chayolam." In this scenario, the cancer is terminal; person will not be able to live. Haynu achayim regim l'stam an inshed gizmanei. They're not going to live a regular life like most people. Lakozman kotzer leizah chadashim. They only have a matter of months. Do you have to do things to help the person, to save him, where the month ahead that he's going to live is just going to be full of pain? He writes, "Hine l'fimash in this bar, kam l'rabi b'samei marpe, k'shi efsher l'harach yimei acholah,
You could have medicine you could give him, treatments you could give him, that all it's going to do is just extend the days of his sickness. All it's going to do is just extend his life. It's only going to be in pain. And you would have to tell this to the patient, the sick patient. Does he want to continue the treatment? If he wants to live longer, he'd prefer that rather than death, then you have to give it to him. However,
but if he declines it, he doesn't want it, so then you don't have to give it to him.
He does give a scenario, you know, Elaim who Wahara Chayav Ashiyav Rofi Yosigado.
You could have a scenario that he says, if by extending it, maybe he'll get a better doctor and get better treatment and might be able to, so then you wouldn't be allowed to give it to him. But assuming there is what you say, quote unquote, medically, no hope, then the person would have a choice, take the treatment, take the medicine, or not. Why? Because at this state, it's only an issue of extending a person's life. The person is suffering, and the Torah, of course, is machshev, the person suffering. But most of all, the most important element is what Moshe is saying, in this scenario, you're not actively hastening the person's death. You're holding back from something that would extend his life. Now, where exactly this line is, not so simple. There's a difference, the motions and the lay of post can say, between giving a person food, even classic medicine that this person was accustomed to taking, versus a new treatment which will add more life to him. That's where Moshe's chalk. There's something actively hastening his death, and passively, you're passing up this treatment, which would extend a life of another few months of suffering. That's a difference. Now, obviously, this is a major, major shiloh, and please don't walk out ready to paskin the shiloh just from hearing today's share. But you'll know the issues involved to ask a delicate question, chas v'shalom aleinu, if these situations come up. But that's where, this is one example of a tshuva in print, where Moshe talks about such a scenario, and he gives the green light, if all these conditions are met. It's passive, not active. The person is deathly ill. No hope for a cure. Even if there's a hope, this doctor doesn't think there's a cure, but there'll be another doctor that maybe could do it, and it wouldn't give the green light. And additionally, the person's going through so much pain, and they would make such a decision, then there is a heter for that. Yes?
Can you make a neder that you're going to donate years of your life to a beloved person that you know is a young person?
You mean like an organ donor?
No, no. It's just, I've read about where people said, I'm going to donate 10 years, like somebody's 25.
Very
years
interesting
old.
Question. You're not asking from a medical perspective. You're asking like, you and the davening, Shemayim. There is a chazal, they say, that Adam Rishon dedicated 70 years of his life to David HaMelech. There is a halachic concept like that. But that's a little more esoteric, not in the medical aspect alone. But yeah, you know, it's a corollary, this idea of davening, you know, for death, you know, davening for life and different things. Interesting. What I'd like to do now that we have these principles, really, I would say three principles. But the first two, which are, as I say, a brick wall, red line, the sanctity of life and the idea that we are not owners of our bodies. That's two ideas on one side of the spectrum. The other side of the spectrum, there is an allowance made for a person suffering under certain clear circumstances that one would be allowed to refuse treatment, which mamela would enable a person to hasten a person's life. Passive euthanasia would be allowed in certain circumstances. I'd like to go through some practical cases brought up. I read in articles in Sfarim. There's one resource I found was phenomenal. There's a Sefer Nishmas Avram. It's written by a person, Dr. Abraham Abraham. I believe he's a doctor in Shari Tzedek. Top notch. I believe he was a ger. Is that true? I'm not sure.
I knew him personally.
Really?
He worked for Shari Tzedek.
Really? I'm amazed. Fascinating, fascinating. Sefer. For the record, Artscroll even translated this. There's a few volumes in English. Well done. It looks like he himself was involved in the process of writing. Excellent, excellent Sfarim. You know, clear, goes through many scenarios, many cases. And definitely there's quite a few nowadays. There's quite a few medical encyclopedias. Zilberstein has one. There's another one we have in the basement, Dr. Steinberg. A lot written in medical ethics, medical situations and halacha. So I would like to share with you four practical cases. First one's from the article that this Dr. Abraham wrote. And he talks about a case of a person that had emphysema. And he saw this person in the hospital 2 years earlier. And the person was back. And it was what referred to as end-stage emphysema. And this person was literally fighting for every breath that he had. And 2 years before that, the hospital already had in the file that he wrote that, let me die. He had a note about it. And Dr. Abraham was treating the patient, met the patient. And obviously it was a painful thing to see the person in such a state. And he had a conversation with him. He says, what were the last 2 years of your life been since we last saw you? And, you know, you survived, but suffering every breath in this situation. So the person said, a living death, worth nothing. And Dr. Abraham, as a religious doctor, said to him, do you have any grandchildren? And the person responded, yes, I have four. Do they ever visit you? He says, yes, often. And he writes in parentheses, and his face lights up as he says this. Yes, do you enjoy them? He says, what a question. Every minute is like heaven. And then, maybe Dr. Abraham was also a lawyer in his other life. He asks, was it worth living then? And he didn't answer. Obviously, these are gut-wrenching, scary things. I saw Rabbi Yitzchak Breiteritz has an article on the topic. And he writes, think about this idea, you know, people could write a living will when they're 60 years old. And right now, you know, they, through life experiences, they have a loved one, they have a parent, they have a friend who goes through one of these tough scenarios. And they say, you know what, if I'm that scenario, DNR, don't do this, I want to die. He says, that decision made by a 60-year-old might be a little different if you revisit it when he's 80 years old and he appreciates what life is, he has grandchildren, this and that. Might be a different question, different Shiloh. The lawyers, maybe you should, you know, tell all your patients, you know, your clients, hey, sir, let's constantly redo these, you know, every few years, every year. Lots of business.
6 months.
6 months? Sure. But I'll give them the share. But life changes. People's perspectives in the life change. At 60, you saw the pain, you couldn't handle it. But at 70, where you realize you're 70, I value life. I want that to be taken away from me. It's a very important perspective to have. I saw another case, this was brought down here in the Sefer. I'll say this outside, save a few moments. Dr. Abraham gives, based on the advice of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, he was very close to Rosh Shlomo Zalman and got lots of directives from him, that Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, as we were talking before about the balance between actively ending a life, hastening a life, versus passively doing it. There, he says, for example, a cancer patient must be given food, must be given intravenous, all those must be given to the patient. However, new treatments, especially experimental treatments, that's different. And that's something which the person would have a right to refuse. Now, important to me to point out, when I talk about the person refusing, so obviously, not in all scenarios is the person alert, up, that he can make such a decision. And in those situations, obviously, family members are involved in making the decision. But the poskim write, the decision that the family members must make at that time is a decision what that person would want. Not what's good for you. Obviously, certain circumstances will be easier, be less costly, but it's not. That's not how you decide it. It has to be what that person would want. And a very tricky thing, yes?
Does the health proxy actually count at all from a halakhic standpoint with the person giving over the right to make the decision so they actually set who they want to decide for them?
Yes. I will.
Giving over the right to implement the individual's decision. That's a big difference.
Oh, that fits exactly
and
right.
I had that exact case. A woman came in with her brother. We talked about the halakhic living will, and we talked about withholding historic, you know, crazy treatments and everything. And she said, that's what I want. He said, I don't believe in that. Anything that's available must be implemented. And we sat there for 20 minutes. And she looked at me and she said, Stephen, I have to pick another surrogate. This is not my wish.
Right.
I cannot impose his approach on what I desire.
Right.
And these
right.
things happen. And
yeah.
they're difficult.
This, I mean, this really, this whole thing, the directives, is what this program is being offered in Torah Semes' campus at 10:30. Definitely very kedai for people to look into. With diabetes, I saw a very interesting point. Diabetes, person who already had a pre-existing condition of diabetes, the insulin for them is like food. That's medicine. If one would deny the person that, that's not denying the treatment, that's denying food. And that would, the post-com view, that would be akin to hastening the person's death.
Well, that denial causes total kidney failure.
Right.
So that
right.
truly does.
Right. So any antibiotics that a person was taking pre the sickness, simply that has to be continued even when the person is deathly ill. It's only new treatments and stuff that one would have the right to renege on. Yes.
And morphine.
Ah, that's the next shot I'd like to talk about. Morphine is beferish in this tshuva. If you look on the bottom of Nishmas Avram, Ode Amar Li Agon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Shem Motor Litein Morphine Chodom L'Chola Hagoseis. Morphine is a painkiller, extreme painkiller, that can be given to a person who's deathly ill. Kishizech Yuni Kedej Lishchoch Es Ka'oven. In order to lessen the person's pain, even though some people pointed out this morphine could have the side effect that it could hasten the person's death. The goal of this treatment, it's only if your intention is to ease his pain. If your intention is to ease his pain, and also, I might make it quicker, then one will not be allowed to do it. If your intention is just to ease the pain, then one would be allowed to give it. He does give some scenario later, which I'm not so clear medically what that means, but where any drop would, one thing of morphine would go and kill the person, then you wouldn't be able to give it to him. But if, as long as it's given in a bigger dosage, which is not so clear, right? So this is important to know. Even within morphine, there are madrigas of some cases would be okay to give, but other cases not. What emerges definitely from today's share is these are obviously heavy topics, complicated topics, but hopefully the perspectives, that is clear. That on one hand, the Torah values every moment of life not just for not for the quality of living or for the tshuva or for the future mitzvahs a person will do, but just because you're alive. Life is something which is not ours, our bodies are not ours, our time is not ours, but it's something which is so precious, it's eternal, it's from a different world. And of course the Torah does value suffering, and there is certain circumstances because of suffering one's allowed to do some passive actions that would allow for the hastening of death. But those are limited, and it's not even a balance. It's a brick wall, it's a red line that we have, what life is, what sanctity of life is. And Be'ez Hashem, the schus of learning these halachas, we should all be zocha to not need to come onto them.